Before the break, we were having a conversation with Glenn. He's still on with us about whether or not it is appropriate, A, to continue to bash malfeasance, lies, deadly distortions perpetrated by politicians, governments, militaries, financial institutions, the media, and religions, and to expose and condemn them, and in the process to show righteous indignation against them, as I did against the Obama administration and their statements regarding the Israeli response to the Islamic rocketry attacks on its territory, as to whether or not that was appropriate vis-a-vis the unique position that we're in on this program, from the fact that we actually know who God is, that his name is Yahweh. We know precisely his solution for an exit strategy, a way to disassociate ourselves from politics and religion and militarism and economic schemes, and to become part of his covenant. And that we know that he has predicted in precise detail exactly what's going to happen. I mean, I've done a month of programs on what Yahweh had to say about the Syrian proxy war that's being fought right now. He covers it in great detail. In the 17th chapter of Yeshayah, he tells us exactly what's going to happen, when it's going to happen, and what the consequence is going to be. And he lashes out at America as being the provocateur and talks about the carnage that's going to result from this grotesque experience. And so when we know what's going to happen, should we even bother to expose and condemn the perpetrators and to show indignation, anger against them? So in that light, I'd like to return back to you, Glenn. I'm open to your thought process here and suggestions. Go ahead and make your point. Now we have Glenn on the switchboard and clearly carried over from the break.
Hello, I just,
okay. I'm glad you're there. I was looking forward to hearing more what you had to say. All right, you heard my summation of Was that a reasonably accurate summation of the point that you were making?
Sure. Let me run the ball here for a minute.
Please.
I'm not the least bit concerned with your expression of exasperation with the whole thing.
Okay.
What I find myself thinking, as someone who is thoroughly familiar with apologetics, polemics, and debate, mm-hmm. and spending great amounts of personal resources on cursing the darkness and such, I've been listening to you for...
Hmm. Well, I don't know what just happened to Glenn, and hopefully he will call back and we can continue to pursue this. I'm going to just share with you some of my thoughts on this subject, hoping we get Glenn back. I did nothing on this end, I want you to know, to cut him off. I find this subject to be most edifying, and when it comes to constructive criticism, even if he had taken exception with me being angry at the Obama administration for their comments, and he wasn't, I still think that's fair game, and I have no problem with him saying that. So this is not a case of me disconnecting from Glenn. He was somehow disconnected, and we hope that we are rejoined by him. I can tell you that in the 3 hours, which is really reduced to about 45 minute segments each day, we have the opportunity to talk about many things. We have presented Yahweh's perspective from his creation account, and I've done programs on creation all the way through the formation of the covenant. So we've covered the opening book of the Torah. We've detailed the statements regarding creation, shown how they are precisely accurate, talked about relativity, talked about everything, including the transformation of energy into matter, the nature of time, how we know that the creation of the universe took six 24-hour days from the perspective of the Creator, but yet that was 15 billion years from our perspective looking back. We've gone into the details associated with the testimony regarding the flood, and then we dove right into every aspect of the covenant. And we're now doing a series to expose and condemn the writings of Paul, because the vast majority of Americans and many in the world, the largest religion in the world, is Pauline. It's Christianity. Paul was the founder of the Christian religion. And so we're trying to free people from the myth of Christianity so that they are at least open to what God has to say. And in that vein, I have chosen, rightly or wrongly, to devote a significant part of this program to exposing and condemning religion, politics, militarism, and economic schemes worldwide, because just as you have to distance yourself from Pauline Christianity before you're in a position where you can even consider what Yahweh is offering by way of his covenant and get to know him, the same thing is true for governance and patriotism and militarism. Until you can recognize that all of that stuff isn't worthy of your allegiance and you walk away from it, you're not in a position to even consider what God has to say. So, you know, it's a two-pronged approach. Let's expose and condemn all that is wrong, and then let's present what is right. Glenn, I'm glad you called back. I don't know what caused you to be lost into the ether world, but you were just starting to run with your ball, and I'm glad you called back. Happy to be able to listen to you.
I could hear from what you were just saying that you get the gist of where I'm going. And yes. I'm not saying not to expose and condemn why. I guess I'm just sort of respectfully suggesting that maybe in previous months it seems you spent more time explicating the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms and reading from them. And I would just suggest that I think there's more peace, more edification, more effective witness. There's an inherent power to Yahweh's words. And since you don't, you're not trying to build some kind of super church or super cult or something, you don't have an expectation that gazillions of people are going to be, brought to God's covenant. You see the remnant as being very small.
Yes.
I know I personally, I enjoy hearing when people explicate, God's word. And so I just sort of suggesting, maybe a little less time cursing the darkness, a little more time lighting the candle.
That's an interesting perspective. And I would say that about a third of the emails that I get regarding the show voice that same conclusion. And by the way, we do have a program that airs on Friday evenings or afternoons, depending in your case, would be evening starting at 7:30. That's on Yada Yada Radio, that is devoted entirely to the Torah. And the conversations about anything other than the Torah are usually limited just to a few moments in an introduction. And it runs for an hour and a half without commercial interruptions, strictly on the Torah. So we do have that program on Friday evenings. 7:30 Eastern time is when it runs to celebrate the Shabbat. Now, that said, about a third of the emails that I receive on the show, they listen to the show because of the unique position on news, that this is the only program that seems to be able to explain why the Islamic world is so screwed up, that explain why the government's plan relative to entitlements is so bankrupt, that can explain the broken rhetoric of our military and of patriotism and where the world is headed vis-a-vis all of the armed conflicts. that are so pervasive. And so about a third of people said, you know, that's why they listen to the show, and they're glad that we end with the hope that Yahweh was providing. Now, don't really know the right answer on this one, Glenn. I do know that my ideal, if I got my preference, not that my vote matters here much, but if I got my preference, I'd spend the first hour exposing and condemning human schemes. Now, if you look at Yahweh's approach on the Torah, prophets, and Psalms, he's pretty even-handed in terms of exposing man's religious and political schemes and military schemes and condemning them and telling those who are willing to listen to him the consequence of them. And he goes into great detail explaining their motivations and the cause and the consequence of such schemes, even throughout the Torah and, of course, in the prophets and in Psalms. And then he spends about half of his time telling us the benefits of choosing to engage in a relationship with him. And there are times when I'm reading the prophets like Yeshayah and Yirmiyah where it's the propensity is closer to two-thirds, one-third. About two-thirds of the time is exposing and condemning the choices that people have made to league with religion and politics. And one-third is, you know, if you simply change and you come to observe what I have to say and listen to me and engage in a relationship with me, you know, everything's going to change. It's going to be positive for you. So if you look at even at Yosha as he was sharing, you know, his Sermon on the Mount is a treatise on the Torah. Now, he does go into bad fruit. And he does explain and expose the darkness, even in the Sermon on the Mount, which is three chapters long in Matanyah. But it is mostly a treatise on the Torah, and that's how he begins. But then if you listen to what he has to say, he's pretty much even between condemnation of the darkness of religion and politics and a profession of what is right. And mostly when he's professing what is right, he's simply saying, if you want to understand, go read the Torah and Prophets. That's where you're going to understand. Glenn, stay with us through the break. Let's continue to talk about this, and particularly to talk about where we are now with Paul. Glenn made a proposition of whether or not it was more appropriate to spend more time by blowing out the flame, the fire of evil, politics and religion, patriotism, militarism, that sort of thing, or more time lighting candles that shed light on the Torah, prophets, and Psalms. And I think, Glenn, I was going to tell you, my preference would be to have the program the first hour to expose and condemn human institutions based on the news of the day. The second hour, I would really love to be just all Q&A, you know, caller questions, caller statements. The interaction with callers and particularly if the callers want to talk about the covenant and questions they have, which is the most often with Yahweh, the better. I'd love that second hour just to all be spontaneous interaction with the listeners. And then the third hour that we would turn to the Torah, prophets, and Psalms. Now, there's two things that have changed here recently, and I have to think through this, which I think is appropriate for. That's why I was encouraged by your questions and your statements and your comments here. One is that the world has really taken a decided turn for the worse here in the last few months. I mean, it really has. I know that we've had a lot of things that have been wrong for a long time, but there are more conflicts that are being waged right now that are repulsive than we've ever experienced. I mean, the situation in Nigeria and Syria and Iraq and in Iran and in Egypt, in the Ukraine. the belligerence of the United States against China, against Russia, we've really got a mess. And we've really got a much bigger mess economically also than we've had before. Things have really changed. I mean, we've entered a very dark and scary period.
A lot of things, we're on the verge of a lot of things going parabolic, and you know that.
Yeah, and they have.
This Ebola thing is going to go parabolic, you know that.
Yes,
it's
right.
It's not going to be carried. It's not going to be carried. It's going to be carried to the West by healthcare professionals.
Yeah. Oh, of course.
Just like the Middle East would.
Yeah, the SARS virus in the Middle East, the same exact situation.
The symptom was brought to America by two healthcare practitioners. Right. That's how it's going to get if you get over to the West.
Correct. And Yahweh told us that this was going to happen as we approach the last days. That's why I always gravitate towards those kind of stories, because we were told they were going to happen. The controlling influence of climate change right now, it's gone parabolic. And so there's the news is so much more alarming and so much more stratifying in terms of whose side you're going to be on. And there seems to have been almost a zealous rebirth here of conspiracy theory, which takes people in the wrong direction. And so there's a lot to cover in the news. And so that's part of it. The other part of it is I made the decision, and I'm beginning to question it, as to whether or not I should present Questioning Paul on this program. And I was going to present Questioning Paul on this program because, A, I spent a year rewriting it, and I haven't covered it since it's been rewritten in any audio form. And you have to recognize that the majority of Americans still identify in one way or another with Christianity, although it's right now right around 50%, and it's declining rapidly. But unless you expose and condemn Paul, and Christians recognize that his letters are grotesquely unreliable, counterproductive, they don't have a chance in the world of coming to know Yahweh. But what that does is it keeps us from focusing on, let's just present the covenant. Let's focus on what the Torah teaches. In the Blog Talk Radio program of Yada Yada Radio, we're now doing our second pass through the psalm that I think is the most powerful in the world. Oh, the 119th song is my favorite piece of literature in the world. And it's my favorite piece of literature because it explains how to observe the Torah. And it is a lot of fun to spend an hour and a half once a week going through that. And I've been through it now three times. I wrote it, I translated the psalm, thought about it, wrote and shared the insights I gleaned from it, and I've been through it twice now in audio form, sharing insights from it. And yet I can't get enough of it. And it's so edifying. It is so uplifting. I'm not arguing with you here. I'm actually agreeing with you. So let's continue to talk this through. We'll be back in a moment. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. I don't want to sound defensive here, and I'm genuinely not trying to be defensive here. But I just want to provide a little perspective. Back in June, what was that? Maybe 5 weeks ago, I started a new document for me to copy and paste the salient portion of news stories that I find in the various news sources that I consider every day. The reason I changed in June to a new Word document is the one that I had through May was about 500 pages long of stories that I wanted to comment on. And so in early June, I started a new one. I just checked. Now I eliminate. Anytime I cover a story, I have another Word document that is just reported news. Because sometimes I want to go back and look at an article so if I get my facts right. And so this is just now unreported news that I have read the article and I've taken excerpts of the article that I wanted to share as part of this program. It's 400 pages long. The most I can cover in an hour is about six pages. It's 400 pages long. That's how much news is being disseminated that is worthy of a conversation. The other thing I want to say, and we have, by the way, Kirk has called in, and I want to get Kirk's input in this this discussion, is that when we're talking about situations vis-a-vis the mythical people known as the Palestinians and Yisrael, we are right in the wheelhouse of what Yahweh wants us to be talking about. And Yisrael is his favorite place on earth. Jerusalem is the source of our reconciliation. It's really important to, when we talk about, for example, the history of Rome as the beast and how Christianity grew out of that legacy of the beast that is Rome, and how these forces now are working against Israel. That's right in Yahweh's wheelhouse. So, not saying that to be defensive, just saying that to communicate. Kirk, my friend.
Yes, sir.
I bet you have a perspective on all of this, and I bet it's a wise one.
Well, I don't know about that, but it's I picked up the phone because I heard you say that you were thinking about questioning Paul.
Yes, I am.
So, and to me, when you started doing it, it was extremely exciting, and the reason I feel so strongly about that is because we are a Christian nation,
yes,
called, and Paul founded it.
Yes.
It is the Roman Empire.
Yes.
Or propagated by the Roman Empire, thus became,
yes,
the Roman Empire. America,
yes,
has become the Roman Empire.
Yes.
And it's doing everything. The only thing the Roman Empire would not do that we seem to be able to do is they didn't arm their enemies. But beyond that,
yes,
to kill Paul, to me, and to kill Christianity, remember, I grew up in a Christian world, and
yes,
as a Christian.
As did I.
To kill Christianity also would kill Islam.
Yes, it would.
Because
without Christianity, Islam wouldn't exist.
It is the Western world and the Western way of thinking, the Western,
yes,
concepts that are allowing these people or furnishing these people with arms, with opportunity,
mm-hmm,
such and such and such. So when you kill, now listen, I read the same scriptures you do, or the same
mm-hmm,
Torah that you do,
mm-hmm,
and Yah already told us how it's going to come out, but if,
right,
you're going to stand up and say, look, this is wrong,
right,
at least think about this, then kill Paul.
Yeah.
I mean, he's the enemy. Yah
was
all so much about him. You said, you know, he's a plague of death, so why not?
Yeah. Okay. I'm gonna play. I'm not gonna use the term devil's advocate, but let me challenge one of the things that you've just said. By the way, I happen to agree with you. So my challenge here is for the purpose of discussion, as we, because we have lots of options, and that's what's Glenn's point. We have lots of options. The question is, what do we emphasize when we have the options? And since this is a very unique opportunity, maybe the only place in the English-speaking world today that has a media presence that is capable of sharing Yahweh's message. So that's a very unique opportunity that we have. And it's not because we're special. I dearly love you, Kirk. I think, and you know, I enjoy the dialogue we have with the Glenn. And the fact of the matter is, there are very few people who know what Yahweh had to say and are willing to present it using his words. And so we do have a unique opportunity to do that. Now, let me get a bit into to questioning Paul. I think there's a way to do questioning Paul that where we accommodate what Glenn is looking for,
mm-hmm,
and I don't go insane. Now, by the way, the insane comment is not a criticism of Glenn. There is nothing Glenn said. Yeah, there's, you and I agree with what, with Glenn's point. Questioning Paul is hard for me. I spent a year of my life writing it initially. I spent another year of my life, doubling its length. I am really angry at Paul for what he did. I am disgusted for how many people he has misled. Covering Paul's letters is painful because of the number of people who have been beguiled by him. And so it isn't uplifting for me. Now, there's a way that we can, I think, continue to expose Paul because of the fact that he is the basis of the most prevalent religion in America. About 3 billion people would identify one way or another with Christianity. And until the world begins to distance itself from Christianity, there really is no hope for the majority of people. And that is to try to do what I've at least been attempting throughout the review of Questioning Paul, is that about 70% of what I've shared is being ad-libbed. It's not in the text of Questioning Paul.
Mm-hmm.
And what I'm trying to do is that as we cover something that Paul said, is to take the time to say, this is God's alternative. This is God's perspective on this, which accommodates what Glenn is looking for and keeps me sane, because, you know, to wallow in the insanity, the moral decadence, the lies of Paul, for me to spend a third year of my life in it, that's tough. I mean, it's like working in a sewer. It's like the time that I did Islam. You know, it's like working in the sewer. And yet, Paul does provide a marvelous foil to contrast his lies with the truth. You know, it's like, for example, Paul began by saying that he was speaking for the God, the Father, that raised Ayusu from a lifeless corpse. And that gives you an opportunity to say, no.
Of course.
I know that the basis of Christianity is that God died for their sins, but God can't die. God's immortal. And so a religion that's based on the notion that God died for you is a religion based upon a lie. You know, if man can kill God, he's not much of a God. And God is immortal. Man did not kill God. The physical body of Yahusha died, but the physical body, as it relates to the totality of God, is not even a fingernail clipping. I mean, it's absolutely meaningless other than the symbolism as the Passover lamb. It gives you the opportunity to get people who have been beguiled by this notion God died for their sins to see the bigger picture. And it's an opportunity for agnostics and atheists who are turned off from God because of the religious lies. They said, come on, why would I want to believe in a religion where man kills God? I mean, come on, that's stupid.
Sure.
And then it gives you the opportunity to, when you talk about a lifeless corpse, to resolve, if you're a thinking person who just happens to be raised a Christian, when I tell you that there's one thing in common amongst the three eyewitness accounts on Bikurim, which is the first day of the week, when Yahusha was reunified, his soul and spirit were reunified, and he was celebrating firstborn children. And the one common thread is something that you know quite well. Share it with our listeners. What is it?
Well, that's that the spirit was reunited with a soul, not right. With a body.
And as a result, when his mother saw him, did she recognize him?
Not at all.
No. When the disciples saw him, did they recognize him?
They didn't know him. He had to do tricks to show him.
Yeah. Did he, by the way, walk through the wall?
He went through it. How he did it?
Yeah. Okay.
Placement or something.
Is it possible for a body to go through a wall?
Not last time.
No. And did he meet with a couple of fellas that had followed him for a couple of years on the road to Emmaus?
They knew exactly who he was, but they didn't recognize this guy.
Yeah, that's right. They followed Yahusha for 2 years, knew exactly, clung to every word he had to say for 2 years. And then this guy shows up, and they had no idea who he was. In fact, he had to talk to them and call them morons before he was able to finally identify himself. And so if you're reading that, and the biggest event of Christianity is supposed to be this resurrected physical body, And that's what they celebrate every year under the banner of Easter, is this physically resurrected body. And their own eyewitness testimony says, uh-uh, didn't happen that way. No one recognized him. That body was gone. And then you can point to the Torah and say, what does the Torah say about the body of the Passover lamb?
It has to be destroyed.
Yeah. Consumed in fire, eradicated that evening. And so you can use the stupidity of Paul to point out the brilliance of Yahweh. You know, we'll get to it later, but, you know, Paul was always saying that that no one can obey the Torah, and since the Torah is law which has to be obeyed, and no one can obey it and keep it perfectly, that everyone is condemned by the Torah, that it's a mean document that is a set of laws that cannot possibly be obeyed. Now, none of that happens to be true, and we'll talk about that after the break. But doesn't Paul routinely tell those reading his letters that they have to obey him? All the time. And so Paul is the one who is actually advocating a religion which has to be obeyed. And in Hebrew, with Yahweh, there's no word for it. Shattering myths. So, Kirk, your advice would be to continue through questioning Paul, particularly since we've done Bereshith, Genesis. We've covered the creation account for those who wish to listen to the archives so that you know that Yahweh is credible. You get to know him. We've covered the flood from a scientific perspective. And we have covered the covenant and how to participate in the covenant. That your view would be that this is now an appropriate place to expose and condemn Paul.
I think so. Paul, to me, and I said it to Terry the other day, and she agreed, Pauline Christianity has destroyed the souls of every member of my family.
Yeah.
And most of my friends.
Yeah.
And they're not exposed to it, and they won't hear it when you talk to them, and I don't have great hopes that it will wake up the masses.
Yes.
It's got to wake up somebody. I mean, because it says them where they are, not some just Torah versus religious study. I mean, this one, you know, comparative religious study. It's right in your face. Look, guys, this is what you believe. This is what you adhere to. This is what you support. This is what you pay money for. And this is what you do to your children.
Right.
Wake up.
Wake up. And I'm unaware of anyone who has read Questioning Paul who has come out of it being supportive of Paul. I don't think there's anyone. I don't think it's even possible. I mean, even if you're closed-minded.
Chapter and come out of it unscathed.
Yeah. Well, you know, there are a lot of religious zealots that will read the first few pages and give up. I would agree with you, particularly the way that the first chapter has been rewritten. Yeah, where it just says, you know, I understand this is the Christian mythos. But when I went through 12 of them, I understand Christians believe, like, for example, that God died for your sins, but that's just not possible. You know, I understand that Christians believe that Jesus Christ is the name of their Savior, but that isn't even remotely possible. And you go through the proof, and ultimately, the way that the first chapter is written is it takes the 12 biggest Christian lies, which are the very crux of the religion. And it shows all of them to be impossible. And then you each time I said, so, Christian, when you realize that there's no church, there's no Christ, there's no Trinity, there's no Lord, there's no Jesus, there's no Christ, God didn't die, there was no bodily resurrection, once you come to know that all of those are lies and that your religion has purposefully and deliberately deceived you, why are you going to continue to trust them?
Well, we used to go into church every Sunday and check our brains, you know, and not ask those type of questions, even though we didn't always know all those questions to ask. But still, you know, I have no excuse. But if you hit it enough times, I mean, you go, duh, you know,
duh.
How stupid can I be forever?
You know, one of the toughest things for me in the Christian New Testament, of course, when you go to church, that's all they want to talk about is the New Testament. And one of them was, at the time I thought his name was Jesus. I know that's no longer the case. But the line, my God, why have you forsaken me? And, of course, according to Pauline Christianity, he was the totality of the Godhead bodily. And if he, right, so if he's saying, God, why have you separated yourself from me? Why have you deserted me here? Then it wasn't God who died. And so since my religion is based on the death of God for my sins, and God is saying, this man who is supposed to be the totality of God is saying that God has abandoned him. What on earth? I mean, that was something you had to read through or read past because you couldn't deal with it. Now, once you understand the Torah, you would know exactly what happens. Since God can't die, the spirit of Yahweh, the set-apart spirit, departed the physical being of the man so that the body could die as the Passover lamb and so that the soul could go into Sheol to honor the promises of matzah and unleaven our souls of the sin of religion and politics. And all of a sudden something, wow, well, that makes sense. And then you go one step further and it said, well, that line, my God, why have you forsaken me? He's not asking a question. He's providing an answer.
Right.
And the answer is, you want to understand what's happening here, go to the place that that begins with, my God, why have you forsaken me? It's the 22nd Psalm. The 22nd Psalm explains exactly what's happening there. It explains exactly what Yahusha was going to do. It's the best, most vivid eyewitness account of exactly what transpired. It was just written 1,000 years in advance of it. And so I think that's the answer, as we stay the course. We continue to expose the lies while witnessing to the truth.